This podcast is being recorded on the lands of the Wurundjeri people of the Kulin Nation. We pay our respects to their elders past, present and emerging, and acknowledge their ongoing connection to land, waters and culture. Colonisation and genocide are ongoing processes that continue to this day. This always was, and always will be, Aboriginal land.
Hey everybody, welcome back to Auspol Snack Pod. I almost forgot the name of the podcast there for a second. We bring you Australian news in bite-sized chunky forms. We also talk about memes of the crispy variety and otherwise. We're also the official podcast of the Auspol Shitposting Facebook group. So if you hear us talking about aforementioned crispy and otherwise memes and you're like, I would like to see those crispy and otherwise memes, please come and join the group. But make sure you answer the questions. Because otherwise, you're not going to get in, like several people who are on the waiting list right now. And if that's you, get on it. Okay, my name is Zach Lesnack. I'm a mod on the Auspol Shitposting group. And with me is confidant, close member of my inner sanctum, OG inner sanctum member, really, of mine.
Zach just gestured at me several times while he was saying that as if to say, you should introduce yourself now. But then he kept talking. So I was
moving on.
Hey, I'm Noon, also known as I Know Funkenstein on Facebook. I'm the admin and creator of Auspol Shitposting. I like how you're messing with our tagline there, Zach, just changing things up a little.
Yeah,
new year, new tagline.
Yeah, definitely planned, and I'm sure that it was entertaining and not at all embarrassing. Speaking of which...
Yeah. Speaking of not at all embarrassing, we have a little hot correction from last week. We awarded Shitpost of the Week to Leah, who, as we said at the time, is a big supporter of the show, who we really appreciate her contribution to the show and to the group and to being progressive in Melbourne. She does a lot of work there. She did not make that meme, unfortunately, and I have to take 100% of the blame for that because I said in the group repeatedly that people should steal memes from this one particular Facebook page without crediting them on the basis that that page sucks and has bad politics and I don't want to credit them for their memes. And Leah completely took my advice and posted it and we...
With the caption, I made this myself, which is what really got me.
Right. So you can see how we were confused. But anyway, as Leah then clarified throughout the week, it was a multi-layered shit post to pretend that she did. Anyway, she still gets shit post of the week. Fuck that other page who I'm not going to mention. They make good memes, unfortunately. And
shit post assist of the week.
Yeah.
You take it. So doing a tonal complete 180 here.
Yeah, we're about to have a couple of real heavy stories and then maybe some lighter ones towards the end of the episode.
Yeah. So, do you want to get into our entree this week, Noon?
Yeah, so basically the biggest story in Auspol Shitposting this week was a Queensland member of the Young Liberal National Party. He was the head of the University of Queensland LNP club.
Which I just will mention is not actually officially associated with the LNP.
Yeah, they were until they did some fucked up shit and got, like, expelled from the party, basically. Yeah. They still have that name and they're student reps at University of Queensland. The head of that club, a man named Gavin Wilson, and a few of his buddies went and loudly disrupted a story time for kids done by drag queens at a public library, which was pretty horrifying, and all of the kids and the queens and the parents were all really upset about it. And then the next day, Gavin Wilson killed himself. And we believe as a result of kind of people telling him that he shouldn't have done that. There was probably a bunch of other stuff going on, but yeah. We kind of talked about it before the show and sort of decided that we didn't want to give our own opinions about it too much because it's a really complicated issue. Gavin Wilson was a gay man and there's been a lot of opinions about whether we should think about this as a death of a young gay man or whether we should think of it as the death of a young conservative man or both.
Who actively attacked the queer community.
Exactly, yeah. So anyway, it's a complicated, messy issue. I think some people have been maybe callously cheered by this, and I think other people have been extremely critical of anyone who isn't sad about his death. And I think, anyway, it's a complex, nuanced situation.
It's definitely not our job to tell anybody what the correct emotional response to this is, especially myself as somebody who is in no way, shape or form queer.
Mm.
Like, that's just not something that my opinion needs to be heard on.
Yep.
So, but it is important, and we did want to mention it.
Totally.
But yeah, we're not going to get too much more into it than that.
There's a thread about it in Oz Bullshit posting where you can leave and read hot takes about it. So,
but also please, you know,
try and be at least sensitive about.
Yeah, everyone. And also take care of yourself if you're reading that stuff, because it's a really dark and hard discussion.
Yeah.
So we'll put a pin in that for now and get into our First Nations stories. And just a warning that we are going to be talking about and using the name of an Indigenous person who has died.
We don't always give that warning on the show, but I think we've kind of decided that we should. So, sorry about previous episodes where we haven't given a proper warning for that.
Yeah. Last week we talked about a First Nations woman who died in police custody last week. And we didn't have any details about that, really. More details have come out about it now. So we now know that the woman's name was Veronica Nelson Walker, who was a Yorta Yorta woman. She was 37 years old. She was arrested for shoplifting. Then after representing herself in court, she was denied bail under relatively recent bail restrictions. She ended up in a holding cell, actually in an observational room.
In a maximum security prison. She was remanded there on bail, as in she hadn't been sentenced yet. She was there sort of temporarily and had another court date in a few days.
Yeah. Yeah, she was due back in court in like a fortnight. And she seemed to be going through drug withdrawals. And there are reports from other prisoners that she was crying out for help, that she was in a huge amount of distress. She was checked on once by staff at about 4 in the morning, and then not again until she was found dead about 4 hours later. So we don't have like a heap more to say on this than we already did last week, other than obviously these extremely punitive bail laws are disproportionately obviously going to harm poor and marginalized people, and especially First Nations people. And the system is in need of massive reform.
I was just going to say, in Victoria, First Nations women are incarcerated at a rate 19 times more than white women. Yeah. And, you know, we could give you all sorts of statistics about how our prison and police system fuck over black people and other groups as well, but especially First Nations people and especially First Nations women.
Yeah, absolutely. I don't think that we haven't, you know, we're saying anything about this that we haven't already said and that many other people have said before us. But it's important to acknowledge and talk about each and every single one of these incidents when they happen.
I also think in Australia we can insulate ourselves a bit from the way that police murder black people in the United States. And like, for all that our police are fucked up, they normally don't kill black people in the same way that police in America do, which is like shooting unarmed civilians basically for no reason any time of the day and night. In Australia, it's far more likely that they're going to die after they've been arrested. And I think we need to remember that just because it's not a gun being fired in the middle of a street at a 14-year-old, our cops are still killing First Nations people. Yeah.
The system is still absolutely culpable for these deaths. And, you know, I mean, even this case, like, bears kind of a striking resemblance to the death of Tanya Day.
Yeah.
The fact that she was checked on and needed help, but didn't receive any.
Yeah.
I mean, I encourage everybody just to go and read a little bit about Veronica Nelson Walker and just read a bit about the people that she's left behind who loved her and what kind of person she was, because we need to fight the dehumanization that the state is forcing upon First Nations people. And I think that if you have the emotional and psychological capability to learn a little bit about these people, I think that's an important thing that we can do.
Yep.
Moving on, this next weekend, this coming weekend, or Sunday and Monday, is Invasion Days. So make sure that you get along to your Invasion Day rally. Fuck Australia Day.
Mm-hmm.
Shit is extremely bad. And just a reminder that it's not about changing the date. It's about abolishing Australia Day and then Australia further down the track.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I mean, if you want to read more about that, and especially if you want to get involved in Victoria, then you can follow and support Warriors of the Aboriginal Resistance, who at the moment they've got a call out going for people who want to do paste-ups of their Invasion Day rally posters.
Get along to the rallies. I think there's one in every big city and probably a lot of the smaller ones.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it has been somewhat positive to see the massive kind of inflation of numbers at those anti-Australia Day marches over the last few years. Like, I remember going 3 or 4 years ago in or Melbourne, and it being really kind of small and honestly like a very somber affair, as it should be.
Yeah.
But the rallies have since grown sort of so big that they've eclipsed the official Australia Day parade. And you've got millions of people out on the streets. Pretty wild.
One of my favorite memories of like any protest ever was at an Invasion Day thing, and it was in Melbourne CBD, and the Invasion Day march had a route sort of allocated by the cops, and the like people who were leading the march decided that they were going to go a different way and veered off and went into the main like Australia Day parade and just kind of like took over. And there was an announcer standing at like a platform just near where we were, being like, you know, I think this is very rude. You know, there was the Collingwood Children's Choir were going to sing next, and they just really want to be out here singing, and I think you're being a bit mean to them. And it was just fucking hilarious. And like all of the politicians were like being evacuated by security because they were like 100 people worried about colonialism nearby. And yeah, anyway, the poor Collingwood's children quiet. They're the real victims of colonial genocide. Oh.
Yes. So please keep the real victims in your heart on the day. Moving on.
Okay. I think that kind of is the end of our really heavy stories. So you can take a load off your emotional... I don't know.
I mean, ish.
Still a lot of Nazis coming up, but yeah, it's a bit, I don't know.
Stay tuned for Nazis. Don't worry, we're anti-Nazi. It's all good. Okay, so now it's time for...
You fucked up.
Yeah, so this was Scott Morrison fucking up. And although he hasn't actually done anything specific that we're talking about, a bunch of polls came out this week, and... they have been very, very bad for Scott Morrison. I think he's lost 9% as preferred Prime Minister against Albanese, who's now in the lead. And the ALP is up 3 points. So they're now in the lead in two-party preferred. And the Greens also gained 1 percentage point, which is probably in a margin of error sort of thing. But
this is some real Stephen Bradbury type shit. You know what I'm talking about? The
science fiction author?
No, that's Ray Bradbury.
Ray Bradbury, yeah.
Stephen Bradbury is the speed skater, the Olympic guy who won gold after everybody else in the race fell down.
Totally.
And there's an amazing photo of him crossing the finish line and just like hitting himself on his head like, oh, lol. what I'm trying to say is that ALP have just kind of defaulted themselves into the lead. And it's not even that they've sat there and been neutral. Albanese is still talking about how he supports the export of coal and talking about how Bill Shorten taking an emissions target to the last election was a mistake.
Yep.
Like, he's not doing good.
No,
just that
Scott Morrison has been...
and the coalition have been fucking up so badly.
Consistently and excessively. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. As we all know, polls are not super reliable, so who knows how this is going to translate at, like 4 years from now. But
what we do know is Scott Morrison, You fucked up.
It's true. All right, now for a little palate cleanser. Should we move on to...
You want me to play that sting?
Oh, yeah.
Fashy Australia.
So we've got two fashy stories here, and they're kind of at different ends. One is that sort of, you know, grassroots, grungy fascism, you know,
Basically, we've got some bottom-up fascism,
and
we've got
some top-down fascism. Yeah, yeah. So bottom-up first. In Beulah, it was a small town in Victoria. A small family of Nazi dickheads has been flying a custom-made flag that has a swastika, but then also iron crosses and the, imperial eagle and, assorted other fashy shit on it. And it's kind of like a choose your own toppings bar of Nazi symbolism.
The most fucked up craftanoon of all time.
Seriously, yeah, yeah. Anyway, yes, yeah, so they've been flying this flag for a month or something, and there's actually someone who was a Holocaust survivor who lives over the road from them.
Oh my god.
He has the fucking number tattooed on his arm, he was concentration camp. And he's apparently fucking terrified, of course, and is desperately trying not to get dragged into this. So I'm sorry to have mentioned him, but I don't know. I think it's important to mention because, obviously flying a swastika flag is just an advert to tell everyone that you're a fuckhead who no one should talk to. But it's not only that, it's also actively harming this elderly guy who's trying to not relive his traumatic experiences of genocide, and that he knows that the people over the road would kill him if they thought they could.
You're missing the point here, though, which is that it's not illegal.
That is true. It is not illegal in Australia to wear or fly a swastika flag. Yeah. It would be illegal if he put it above the Australian flag, because there's a law that the Australian flag has to be the top flag on any multiple flag pole.
Oh. Yeah, well, that's fair. I mean, we're Australians first and Nazi second.
That is not true of this guy. Anyway, yeah, so the media have been trying to get to him, and he, came out with scissors that he, menaced them with. And then he was starting to take it down, and the journo yelled over the fence, oh, are you finally taking it down? Is it because all of your neighbors think you're a bad person? And he, stops taking it down and walks inside. Anyway, a cop eventually took it down for him. So
there you go.
Yeah,
why would a cop do that?
Have his address, but if you do have his address, please send it into the show. We won't do any crimes with it. We just want to know.
No, we're going
to
only do very legal stuff, just like the flyer.
Exactly. Yeah, yeah. Okay, so that's our bottom-up grassroots fasci Australia. Now for our top-down structural fascism. A police officer in Victoria is going to court today, the day this comes out, Sunday, with offences including unlawful assault and making threats to kill. He was charged after an internal investigation. We don't have a huge amount of detail about this, but he's temporarily suspended from duty because, as we all know,
that's the worst punishment
a paid holiday is the worst punishment a police officer can make.
Well, it doesn't say whether or not he was suspended with or without pay.
That's true, but we can only assume.
Yeah. Anyway, probably no connection between the Nazis and the cops, I would say,
What are the chances,
just from an overarching perspective,
that the police might have white supremacists in them?
I would say slim to very, very high.
People at home can't see, but I'm making the okay hand gesture right now. Yeah. So. Fuck all those Nazis. That's my take.
Hot take. Mm-hmm. Good job.
Speaking of hot takes.
Time for a potluck.
Potluck. Where you bring the snacks. So this is our segment where a listener sends in a recording of themselves talking about whatever they want, something vaguely news and or memes-ish. And this is both news and or memes-ish, so we'll play that for you now. And this is coming from a friend of the show, Steph Westwood. Thanks, Steph, for contributing and supporting the show.
Hi, snack potters. I would like to bring you this potluck, which is also a blessed take that I saw last week. So you may have seen the hashtag on Twitter, Authors for Fieries, where authors all over Australia and internationally were donating signed copies of their books You get Yum Cha with Ben Law. There was all this stuff donated, and the highest bidder had to donate their bid to CFA or similar, and they raised heaps and heaps of funds. So the game developers industry or community in Australia decided to do the same thing with the hashtag Game Devs for Fieries. And Game Devs for Fieries started auctioning off not only copies of their games, but also exclusive artwork or feedback on code, lessons for students, all stuff to be bidded on to be donated to firefighters. And then our blurst taker came in, which was Mariam Dijtavita, who is a game workers union watchdog, games industry watchdog. And she works with Game Workers Unite, which is a grassroots organization fighting for the unionization of game developers. And she said that it was a navel-gazing attempt because the video games industry is responsible for a huge amount of carbon emissions, and that it was not enough to fight climate change, to sell more games or in the face of, you know, climate change and everything. And this is just an example of, we should improve society somewhat, but yet you participate in a society meme. So on last week with the News Corp financial analyst resigning, it's just another example of we do what we can with immediate action to feel less depressed, but we can do that at the same time as acknowledging that we need to change entire industries. Anyway, so I would recommend checking out Game Devs for Fieries hashtag on Twitter, or checking out Humble Bundle, where you can also get $400-$500 worth of indie Australian-made games for mobile or Mac. You don't need to be a super-duper PC gamer to check these out, and all proceeds at the moment are going directly to Wires, RSPCA, and CFA. I don't work in the games industry. I'm just a big fan. Thanks.
The game devs. I knew it was them. Even when it was the coal export industry, I knew it was the game devs.
Luckily, as a reporter, no one uses any electricity to consume my content that I write.
Yep.
On the internet.
Definitely not.
Thank you, Steph.
Thanks, Steph.
For your potluck. And if you were listening to that and being like, I have opinions, I can do a voice memo of under a minute and send it into Snackpod, you'd be right. And you should do that. Please send us in your hot takes or, you know, little audio ideas, whatever they may be, whatever form they take.
A little song or poem.
We've had songs and poems.
Yeah, it's true. Yeah. We have, yeah.
We hated them, but you should send them in anyway.
Speak for yourself. Cool.
Okie dokie. So now we're moving on to our main course, which is pork a la barrel.
Delicious.
Thank you, Noom, for that.
Both vegan and kosher.
Yeah. So, delicious. We'll both be partaking, obviously. So this is a story about the deputy leader of the National Party spending a whole bunch of money that was for sports clubs in order to try and win elections. Election.
Yeah.
A specific election.
Well, it seems like what she was actually trying to do was to not lose the election that hard, and they kind of accidentally won.
She pork barreled so hard, she crossed over.
They won an election. Yeah.
So, just to start off with, we just wanted to do a quick definition of what pork barreling is and talk about what it actually means, because not everybody is as broken as us in terms of being obsessed with the news cycle. So maybe not everybody knows what the term pork barreling means. So pork barreling is basically when you spend a whole bunch of government money, usually infrastructure money, in specific communities and electorates where you want to win votes. So you're like, hey, I am going to build a new park or a new train line or a new school in your electorate. And that's because I'm from the good party.
Yep.
The origin of the term is a little bit fuzzy. It seems like it's possibly a bit probo. The definition that seems most likely to me that I've seen is that slave owners used to give barrels of salted pork to their slaves as a kind of quote-unquote reward for their hard work, and basically watch them fight over it. And then it became just part of the American political vocabulary to describe public funding. But Noon, you like to distinguish between the kind of pork barreling that happens in the States and the kind of pork barreling that happens in Australia.
Yeah, so I think this comes from sort of having different electoral structures, that in the US, pork barreling tends to be done by people in extremely safe seats, kind of as a reward to their constituents for voting them in for like the 8th consecutive election. And I think that's because when Americans want to cheat at elections, they gerrymander, so they like change the electoral boundaries. That's much easier than actually bribing people, which is sort of how pork barreling works in Australia, where it's almost impossible to gerrymander because we have an independent electoral committee. So pork barreling is used to either shore up marginal seats that look like they're going for that party, or to win people over from marginal seats that look like they're going the other way. So in this particular instance with Bridget McKenzie, the deputy Nationals leader, something like, I think it was 61%. No, I think 60% of the money went to marginal Liberal-held seats, and the rest went to marginal Labor-held seats that they were hoping would flip over to Liberals. So that's what pork barreling is. It's basically like, it gives jobs and infrastructure to that local area, and they're like, oh, thanks, party in power, we'll vote for you.
Yeah, I think describing it as a bribe for local people is fair.
Totally, yeah.
Obviously, you know, sometimes the line between genuinely useful infrastructure
right.
funding and pork barreling is blurry, and we've kind of got a case of that happening here. Before we get too into the weeds on this particular case,
yeah.
I just wanted to basically say that this has been something that happens in Australian politics for decades.
Yeah, it's a long bipartisan tradition.
Absolutely. And this particular case bears a really striking resemblance to a previous case of pork barreling, which happened under the Keating government in, I think it was 1993?
Yeah, that's right. So it was, 93 and 94. This is the so-called Sports Rorts affair.
Better than Utegate.
This current one is now Sports Rorts 2020, so that's great. So this was when, the Keating government was in power, and there was a woman named Roz Kelly who was the Minister for Sports. And she put a bunch of money in very dodgy ways into marginal electorates that they were hoping to win or retain. And the opposition sort of really hammered them about it. And there was an inquiry brought into Roz Kelly. And it turned out that she had basically just, there was no documentation about how the decisions had been made. And that was kind of really the big problem. It wasn't exactly that she was bribing these electorates, because technically it's not illegal. It's this interesting situation where she didn't commit a crime, but she also didn't do it legally. And basically, that's also what's happening now. But yeah, so she completely Roz Kelly completely failed to account for the decisions that she'd made as minister, and then was basically forced to resign. And she did resign, and there was a 1995 by-election for the seat of Canberra, which went to the Liberal Party for, I think it was the first time ever, and since then they've lost it once more for like a year or something. So yeah, she managed to lose an extremely safe Labor seat by being completely irresponsible and useless and bribing the public.
Yeah, and she stepped down after like, basically, there was a whole, you know, it wasn't, what she did wasn't illegal, depending on how you look at it.
Legal.
And she was like heavily hammered by the opposition at the time, the opposition leader at the time being John Howard.
Yep.
You were talking about before about this idea of ministerial responsibility that existed previously in some kind of forgotten era in Australian politics.
Like one of the foundational concepts of our constitution that has just like stopped existing for the last 15 years.
Yeah, I think it is interesting to look at these two cases side by side and see what kind of response Bridget McKenzie is making to an extremely similar situation.
Yeah, yeah.
So, Bridget McKenzie, who is currently the Agriculture Minister and is the Deputy of the Nationals, was Sports Minister in the lead-up to the election. She got a new portfolio.
Reshuffle, yep.
Yeah, in the reshuffle. So, she was in charge of the extremely catchy named Community Sport Infrastructure Grant Program, which basically they had $100 million worth of funding to give out for local community sport projects and infrastructure upgrades. And there was a huge response to this. They got applications that totaled over $300 million. So obviously they had to go through and decide who was going to get the money and who wasn't. So Sports Australia, who was helping administer this, basically had a system where they had several criteria for choosing which projects should get the money, and that was like who needs the money the most and whether or not it was feasible that the infrastructure projects would actually get completed, as opposed to...
The money would kind of go there and they would decide it wasn't worth it or whatever.
Well, like a utopia-style infrastructure project where it's just like... It's purely just for the pork barrel. It's for the announcement.
Yeah,
you just say, "Oh yeah, we're putting X $100,000 into this local into this electorate,"
and everyone who lives there is like, "Fuck yeah!"
And then they vote for you, and then the project never happens.
Yeah.
So part of the criteria for this was that no, we actually want this money to get used to build stuff. Please, it's really important that this is what happens. And then Bridget McKenzie, basically with the help of her office. Decided to give money to a whole bunch of projects that were not approved by Sports Australia, and that's for there were a couple of ways that they did this, and the main one was that she specifically requested her department to find out which of the applications were in marginal seats, and then she gave the money to them, basically.
So there was an article by David Spears about this whole recent affair, and he says that this is a much worse example of pork barreling than basically any other one in Australian history. And the major reason for that is that Bridget McKenzie is not denying the fact that she was using the electoral chances as a deciding factor.
Well, yeah, so you're missing the point here, Noon. It's not actually illegal.
Yep, that is true.
Just like flying a Nazi flag, it's...
Not actually illegal.
Yeah, that's right. Mm-hmm. Which I think and inherently makes it morally
fine.
Right and
yes,
correct.
Yes, that's right. Yeah,
yeah, that's right. Yeah, so 60% of the projects that she ended up funding didn't actually have the approval score from Sport Australia, which means that they weren't likely to get completed or that they were going to people who didn't need the money. One of the most egregious examples of this being an upgrade to the Mossman Rowing Club.
Yep.
Facilities, which was in Tony Abbott's electorate. Now, can you remind me, was Warringah a marginal seat at the last election?
I mean, it wasn't, but it was like it did flip and everyone knew it was going to. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And so this was like, yeah, a desperate attempt to keep tone in. And
by giving $500,000, the maximum possible amount under this scheme, to a rowing club in the 8th richest postcode in Australia.
Yeah.
It's brazen. It's brazen. The pork barreling itself was brazen, but McKenzie's response has been super brazen as well. She's basically been like, yeah, we fucking did it. It's so, not illegal. What are you going to do?
One of my favorite lines was she was like, this wasn't pork barreling. This was reverse pork barreling. and a working title for this episode was Lerab Crop, which is pork barreling reversed, but we thought that was a bit obscure. But I like that because if you accept our definition of pork barreling as a bribe, what she's saying is like, no, I wasn't bribing our supporters. I was bribing Labor voters to become our supporters. Why are you mad at me about
this?
It's
perfectly fine. And obviously that's also not reverse pork barreling. Reverse pork barreling would be all of your constituents getting together
to give the Liberal Party a gift. Yeah, I love it.
Which Bridget McKenzie, I'm sure, would graciously accept, humbly.
Something that I think is pretty hilarious about this whole saga affair is that so there was this audit done into this.
Yeah, we know about this because there was an audit.
Yeah.
By the Auditor General?
Who is an important part of the Australian Public Service.
So I'm told.
Yeah, and seems to have done a pretty good job here.
Yeah.
But the audit started because in the lead up to the election, one of these community grants was handed over by Georgina Downer, who was not part of the government. She was standing for election in Rebecca Sharkey's seat in Adelaide. So she was not in Parliament. She was not a minister. And as part of the election campaign, she was given this enormous novelty check for like $120,000, something like that, that she was photographed handing over to this like bowls club or whatever it was. And everyone was like, she should not be making this announcement. She is not in Parliament. She is not involved in budgeting. She is not... It's like getting it just like hopping on the bus and being like, hey, you, random person, can you just, like, announce our foreign policy or our, like, why did they think it was okay for her to be making this government announcement? Anyway.
Gosh, she's just so bad. She just did such a bad job.
It was really incredible. This isn't a segment about Georgina Downer, but I guess maybe it is now. But
it's a segment about entitled smug politicians who think they can get away with doing the fuck they want.
That's true, and like technically not illegal, but definitely super dodgy behavior. Mm. Yeah. So Georgina Downer used to live in Melbourne, but she grew up in Adelaide, and there was this Rebecca Sharkey seat that everyone was like, Georgina Downer, you're the perfect person to win here. But she's been living in Melbourne for the last 10 years. And if there's one thing people from Adelaide resent, it's the, like,
people bouncing.
Like, leaving the city for the big smoke where they can be trendy and whatever. So she came back and she made all of these statements like, you know, I've lived my time in Melbourne, but I'm really an Adelaide girl at heart. This is where my heart is and this is where my home is, and I'm done in Melbourne, and even if I don't win this election, I'm moving back here. This is the community I care about. And she lost, and then she was like, cool, yes, I'm moving back to Melbourne. It's fucking genius.
One of the other highlights of that campaign was her dad, Alexander Downer, hopping on the, like, community Facebook group
the,
to,
like,
have a
buy
go
swap sell or whatever it was. Yeah.
Yeah, to have a go at people being mean to her. Which was, yeah, fucking, yeah. My God,
genius.
Imagine that, like, getting your former politician dad to go into bat for you. Like,
yeah.
Just, I don't know. Like, aside from how unethical it is, wouldn't you fucking feel embarrassed?
Totally, yeah, yeah.
So, this is not illegal, what Bridget McKenzie has done, but she is under a lot of political pressure, but there's not really anything anyone can do about it, like, from a legal perspective.
Yeah.
You know, if she's not going to resign, she's called the calls for her resignation ridiculous. But obviously the rules around this stuff are cooked.
Yeah,
if this is not illegal, it should be.
I think also there's this issue that, like, all of these, like, long-named agencies that are created specifically to pork barrel with are designed to be at arm's length so that pork barreling doesn't happen. But then the minister who's, like, has to tick off on it is instead like, yeah, yeah, cool. Nah, forget all that. Just do the crime ones. Or the not-crime ones, as the case may be. But, like, yeah.
Fuzzy somewhere in between crime and not-crime
ones. And, like, I think Victoria's been doing pretty well with this. We have Infrastructure Victoria, which has been pretty effective at being an independent third party. One of the things that we listed as, like, a potential example of pork barreling is the level crossing removal that Daniel Andrews has been doing, which, like, again, Zach was saying, like, the lines about these things are blurry, whether or not that's a good project that needs to happen, whether or not the ones that have been picked to do first were the ones that were the marginal seats that Daniel Andrews had to win to keep power. And, like, yeah, I think it's a complicated issue of, like,
I mean, he was just pork barreling the whole city.
Yeah, but the ones that were in, like, the Frankston line that were those marginal seats, they were the ones that got done, like, the day after the announcement.
Of course. And, like, we know that the level crossing program is actually kind of ridiculous and pointless and really expensive. I'd say it's probably more pork barreling in the, like, GDP sense than it is about giving
that
people,
it's
something,
like,
useful.
Employment numbers are going up,
yeah,
and that sort of thing.
It's it's not reducing travel time in any kind of meaningful way. And it's, like,
there are
costing
safety
a whole
issues,
bunch of
but
more,
like,
money than it's saving and that kind of thing, which makes it seem quite pork barrel-y.
Yeah.
But hey,
it's not illegal.
It's definitely not illegal. So that was it was a pretty tasty little morsel.
I hope you enjoyed all that pork.
Quite salty.
Just to wrap up the show, we're going to have
Shitpost of the Week.
Who did it this week?
This is a delightful video that Steph Westwood of recent Potluck fame gets the shitpost layup assist for this one. For sharing in this video, it's a tweet from a guy named Sam Cucciara, who's a reporter with A Current Affair.
Hallowed journalistic institution.
Yeah, and this is really the pinnacle of ACA reportage. It's this video of Sam. He's got a microphone. He goes up to some guy who's, like, spraying the driveway of his home, and he's trying to ask him about some other guy in the background.
Why are you poor in public? Basically, I imagine.
Yeah, I haven't actually watched the video because I have no interest in the current affairs journalism. But this guy just starts spraying Sam with the hose. And it's just fucking beautiful watching this douche in a suit who works for a current affair just getting absolutely hosed down. But Sam, to his credit as an incredible journalist, knows that this is going to be viral footage and goes back and keeps trying to interview this guy. He's like, "Do you think this is an appropriate way to treat a journal?" And the guy also sprays his dick with the hose a lot as well, which is like, obviously quite immature and not probably more effective or more sympathetic than spraying him in the face. But
he's really got the fucking like high blast setting on as well.
It looks pretty brutal.
It's powerful. I mean, yeah, my siblings and I used to hit each other in the face with the hose, and like, it's not painful.
Yeah.
But it is always funny, especially if it's being done to a fucking hack.
Yep. Yeah.
But credit where it's due for posting the footage, I guess.
Yeah.
You know, but yeah, I mean, that's the best you can hope for from a current affair, really.
It's a really good media strategy as well. Like, I mean, I don't think anyone has followed up about what that story was about. They've just rewatched that footage.
Almost as if it's not really about the journalism.
Are you implying that a current affair might have something other than uncovering the vital news stories of the day at heart?
No. That's the end of the podcast.
Sick.
Thank you very much for listening. Hope you enjoyed it this week. Make sure you get out to your Invasion Day rallies on Invasion Day.
And just remember, if something's not a crime, then it's fine.
It's totally fine. You are morally free to do whatever you want within the bounds of the law. That's how it works. If you are enjoying the show and you are not subscribed, please do. If you haven't left us a review yet, please also do that. You can do that.
We really like them. We don't get nearly as many as we would like. So hop on Apple Podcasts or iTunes or whatever.
iTunes is dead now. The latest upgrade of Mac OS, they've removed it.
Right.
So you need to hop on. It's just a new app called Podcasts. Hop on there, leave us a review, or you can leave us a review on Stitcher or on Facebook.
Or Podbean.
I think maybe on CastBox as well.
Yeah.
All of that really helps us out a lot. If you really like the show and you really want to show us some support, head on over to Patreon. You can find us at OzPolSnackPod. If you donate $1 a month, you get a monthly bonus episode. Actually, we're recording our bonus episode today.
So that'll be out sometime this week. And we're going through my bug out bag. So if you're an aspiring apocalypse prepper or you like laughing at apocalypse preppers, maybe this is a good week to sign up.
We've got both ends of the spectrum.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, yeah. One each.
Otherwise, follow us on Facebook. Our Facebook page is OzPolSnackPod. We posted up a relatively crispy OC meme this week, which was doing some business, which was nice. Thank you for your support there. Join OzPol Shitposting Facebook group
answer
if you
questions.
Want to. Please answer the questions. And you can also follow us on Twitter at OzPolSnackPod. I'm pretty sure that's that for this week.
Oh, yeah.
Thanks for tuning in, and make sure you keep on snacking in the free world.
Crunch, crunch.